Hallo und herzlich willkommen beim Kobi Podcast, dem Podcast der Creators of Beautiful Experiences aus München. Mein Name ist Marina, ich bin Marketingmanagerin bei Kobi und ich freue mich auf meine allererste Podcast-Folge. Meine liebe und sehr geschätzte Freundin Katharina Grimm hat mir das Moderationszepter übergeben in Form eines Mikrofons. Und ich bin jetzt erstmal gespannt, welche interessanten und vor allem spannenden Themen wir in Zukunft noch erzählt bekommen. Wir fangen heute schon mal an mit einem, wie ich finde, sehr zukunftsträchtigen Thema, einem extrem interessanten Thema und einem Thema, das man noch nicht richtig greifen kann. Das versuchen uns jetzt aber Daniel und Igor etwas greifbarer zu machen, uns ein bisschen darüber erzählen, was sie schon so erlebt haben und wie die Reise weitergeht. Also bleiben Sie dran für die Reise ins Metaverse. So let's switch to English. Daniel, Igor, I'm so glad to have you here that you can tell us a little more about the Metaverse. So we can start with an introduction. Who are you? What are you doing at Kobi?
You can go, Igor.
Sure, I can go. Thank you for having me here. It's really awesome that I get to talk about such a topic like the Metaverse. If I would say something in short about myself, I'm currently a project manager or product owner, depending on what is needed at Kobi. I'm situated in Croatia in a town called Osijek. In my spare time, as well as now a certain time at Kobi, I am pretty deep into the metaverse topic. I am actually also gathering people that love talking about it and building a community around it on Discord. I do some content mostly on Twitch, which is live streaming, but also started on YouTube. So I'm just really excited to have people to talk about the metaverse with, and yeah, just to see everyone's experiences in it.
So Igor is definitely the go-to guy regarding the metaverse. I'm Daniel. I'm one of the co-founders and managing directors of Kobi. I'm a designer by heart. I'm a gamer by heart. So the whole topic is definitely something which I'm really interested in. Yeah, right now at Kobi, I'm pretty connected to the whole operative business. So working with the teams, being responsible for all the projects that we have and all the clients. And I'm personally really addicted to the metaverse topic, because it's definitely something that's going to change how our agency services or business in general with all our clients is shifting a bit in the next years or decade. And I'm really looking forward to this, because Igor, I, Norina, we had so much fun in the preparation of the whole topic and all gathering all the informations together since Facebook announced that they're going to change their name and really focusing on the metaverse. From that day onwards, we really said, okay, we definitely have to go deeper here. I also want to thank all the people that contributed to the whole Miro board we created regarding the metaverse. So thanks to you guys. That's pretty much about myself and what I'm looking for today.
Thank you, too, for this great introduction. So now we can dive deep into our topic today, the metaverse. So now I will start with the first question. What is the metaverse?
Sure. So you're really starting with the hardest question, I think. Yes. So the metaverse or metaverse, I think it's a Croatian thing. I keep saying metaverse. That's how it's natural to me. You are really starting with the most difficult question that maybe a lot of people talking about it dread, because it's very hard to define what exactly the metaverse is, or if it's already maybe existing, or if it's something that's going to be in the future. So I think the general public conception, how the public imagines, or people that maybe might not be too deep into it, imagine what the metaverse is. It's that you're gonna put something on your head and you're gonna be in a virtual world, and that's gonna be half the world or more, and that we are all just going to be living in this meta world. But this actually is not the exact definition, or is not even what most people are looking for the metaverse to be. There is a very good text about it called The Framework for the metaverse, which talks about it. You could possibly Google it and read more. But it is actually a huge combination of factors coming together, just like it did, for example, with the mobile phone, where not only the mobile phone, the smartphone, or not only the internet, or not only like 3G signal alone could get us into a mobile era, which we are in now, but it's a huge number of combination of factors, products, services, technology, and it is believed that it's going to be the same with the metaverse, that it's going to be coming in waves, as we like to say here at Kobe, that it's going to be a combination of very affordable hardware, maybe glasses that are very comfortable to use, that you aren't even supposed to wear all day, as well as much better internet connectivity. It already started at the moment. You could see it kind of in the production and education, which we maybe will talk about later. But yes, it is supposed to bring you into a world which is either a virtual world or a combination of the real and the virtual world. And at the moment, it's mostly games. You go into it and you experience games, or you go into it and do some production things.
I mean, I'm totally with you, Igor. So I stumbled upon one article that said the metaverse will be the best, if not the most complicated digital platform humans have ever built. I mean, that's just, I think, the summary that you just talked about. That's why it's so hard to answer the question what the metaverse will be, because no one knows yet what it will be and how it would look like. That's just a fact, let's face it.
Okay, I can already tell that we can't get to the end of this topic today, and we don't have to, but we have this mirror board, and as soon as I look into it, there is a new information. You clustered it a little bit, and I think we can at least try to highlight some points and limit this topic a little bit. So what would you say are the essential points?
Sure. Yeah, looking at the, sure. at the mirror board right now, so there's definitely a huge cluster when it comes to the whole UX design related topics, interaction, the experience in general, more the technical or experience part. But we also, on the other hand, have a lot of topics regarding overall security aspects, or why or should there be a constitution for the whole metaverse. Then definitely tech related stuff, virtual reality, augmented reality, hardware, and companies work in this kind of sector. So Apple, Meta, Microsoft, and other companies. Then there's a cluster regarding brands. So what our brands are actually right now doing, Nike Land, Adidas, etc. Then what's really important when you want to think about the metaverse is, of course, how did history work and why are we now thinking about the metaverse and why is it now a topic and what drove us here? So there's a lot of history that's really interesting to read, especially also for us digital native ones and the ones who are working in the digital business now for a decade and even more. It's still interesting how all the internet and everything is working and connected and pushing this topic now. Then, of course, when it's about the virtual space, it's also about the virtual identity. So who am I? Yeah, do I have to really be as realistic as possible, or is it totally fine to, I don't know, fly around being a unicorn? So the pros and cons regarding identity or presence part, it's definitely also a huge cluster we found out, which, I mean, it's obvious, kind of. Different use cases that already exist, educational use cases, business use cases, gaming use cases. And the framework that Igor mentioned, this is really something great from Matthew Ball, the framework for the metaverse. There's so much information in it. It's a lot to read, but super important to just understand how or what should happen that the whole metaverse could really work and will work. I'm just looking at it again because it's such a huge cluster, the whole UX design related part. And it's growing. Yeah, it's still growing. So the whole UX design part is something, it's kind of obvious that I have a lot of interest into this, but also the hardware. I mean, I think it was the Vive headset that we first bought for Kobe. And since then, I'm really following, okay, how is Oculus behaving? Which hardware is coming out? Now Apple wants to sell an own virtual reality headset. Maybe being presented this year, but then being sold next year. So I'm really into the hardware thing as well, because from my perspective, when we talk about the metaverse, and when, I mean, of course, you can jump in not having a virtual hardware or headwear on. But if we think about the metaverse being really a virtual place where you put on some glasses and you're in and you have the immersive experience, if the hardware plays a very important role. And therefore, I'm really following this topic and just checking how is the hardware getting lighter and lighter, and also the control parts. So how do I control myself in the virtual space? That's also something I'm really interested in. Yeah. For example, the Oculus Quest 2, it's still something very heavy on your head. It's not top notch yet. And that still has a very negative effect on the whole experience. Yeah.
Igor, do you have any experiences?
Yes, I did have an Oculus Quest 2. I also did have lots of different headsets. First, I want to say the Oculus Quest 2, or as it's now called, maybe the Meta Quest 2, I'm not sure. It is definitely a huge step up from the old versions of different headsets that I tried, starting with a headset that was literally made out of cardboard. So you make it yourself and you put your phone in. And since the phone has gyroscopes and things like that, and you move your head and it knows you're moving, so it was kind of like a first taste of VR, which was very exciting at the time. And then throughout different times when different headsets came out, like the HTC Vive, which was also great, but it was tethered with a cable unless you have expensive add-ons. So the Oculus Quest 2 was really, really a huge leap. It was the first one where I felt very, very great immersion and fun inside different software, because it is a piece of hardware where you are not tethered to a wire. And also, it is literally, you put it on your head and you start playing. But it is still not perfect. It is still pretty heavy. The software is still made in kind of a way where most users will probably use it once. They will play the game once and they will try the experience once. There were some statistics where they probably will not pick up the headset again. You could maybe look up Steam statistics of VR headset usage. Most users use their headset once and not anymore. So we can see that there's still, as we said, different advances and technological and different kinds of advances needed. However, and today I just actually got a pop-up on my phone saying that 80% of the VR users in the world are actually Oculus Quest 2 users. I'm not quite sure what time frame they took, but that is like the current status. So I did sell my Oculus Quest 2 later on because I tried everything I wanted to try. But now that I'm getting deeper into the metaverse again, I have an urge to buy it again, or at least like maybe the next version that's coming out.
I mean, it's definitely a game changer. Yeah, you're definitely right. I also put it on, no cables. There's no PC needed where you have had to set up Steam software and whatever connections and drivers and all that techy, nerdy part. So huge, huge game changer for the mass market, for the casual user to buy an Oculus Quest 2, to try it out, to get into the metaverse, do the Facebook login, and that's it. So a small barrier to just jump in and try out the virtual reality. Because I also remember not only the cables you had to need for the HTC Vive, but you also had to put the cameras on top so that they can track your position and so on. So it was really a crazy effort that you had to do to walk around and be in a virtual place. So it's definitely a game changer. I also put it on and I was like, really, okay, that's also a very nice experience. How to set up your room, yeah, your position, the level of the room. And then it was a very nice experience to track where your borders are so that you don't crash into your couch or into the table of your room. So a very nice experience as well for all the setup. But then you find yourself in, it's kind of Netflix for games, but just demos and trailers. It's really just for a one-time use kind of trip where you, as you said, try one app and then put it away and that's it. There is no long-time usage there. And it's a lot about gaming still and tech demos. That hasn't changed in the last 2 to 3 years, which is really boring, to be honest. There are not many other cases. Besides, of course, the whole remote work, like the workrooms or spatial, etc. demos. but it's still boring, isn't it?
So someone like me who's new to gaming would get bored?
I believe you would have a blast for a short time, even shorter than us probably. So I loved taking my Quest, which was one big pro for the Quest 2. It is very portable, right? So you can even cast your screen, like what you're seeing, you can cast your TV. So I loved taking it to a friend's place, casting it on his or her TV, and then let them use it. And it was a blast for them. It was mostly for everyone, it was really fun, but even shorter for them, because maybe some a bit longer term usage was in more polished games, more polished multiplayer games to be exact. Maybe that's a place where people are using it a bit more. But as Daniel said, most of the things are still, you try it, you have a blast, and then you don't try it tomorrow again. But there is, as I said, certain software, like for example, one of my best experiences in it was in a game called Echo VR, which is basically you are in space, you're floating, you're competing with a team of four real players against other four real players. And since the Quest is an all-in-one headset, it has a microphone as well in it, so you can talk to them in real time. And you were having a game of soccer, but with like floating frisbees in space. So there's two goals, it's 4v4, and you're throwing the frisbee. And it was a blast because you kind of had that, and which I think is going to be in the future one big thing in the answer of what is the metaverse. You kind of had that connection with other people. You had that sports-like connection where they're cheering for you if you make a goal. You're passing the disc to them. You're, you know, positioning yourself so they can pass it to you. You're just having fun in it. You're having a blast. So that is one rare instance where I actually use the software for maybe 2 weeks, but then the novelty wore off as well, and I am still looking for the next thing.
Okay, so I can tell you are really excited about this topic.
Definitely. I'm excited for what it will be, but I guess it will take a long time until it's really something you can spend a lot of time in.
And I mean, Igor and me, we are into gaming as well. It's easy for us to make us excited about the whole topic, but for others who are not really into gaming, I think it's just really overwhelming to understand, okay, what is it for? What can I do?
Agreed. Definitely. Well, I guess maybe because in a way it is everything. So it's a whole other world, like this real world. You also don't know everything that exists or will exist in this world. And people are trying to turn the coin meatverse now because we're made out of meat. And you don't know what's going to be in the metaverse. So it's already so huge, but not polished. And what will be, you can't know everything about everything in this world, and it's probably going to be the same in the other world, and it's just overwhelming for someone to hear even a fraction of the things that are happening.
Yeah, and I mean, Igor and I, as I said, we are into gaming. So we learned, okay, there was offline gaming, then there were online games, and over the last decade, a lot of really mass multiplayer online games appeared. So it was really natural for gamers to do offline gaming, but then also jumping into online gaming and then hanging out with a lot of people like for hours and having this kind of social connection, even if it's not virtual, in the virtual reality, but still you have this social connection, yeah? And over the years, especially these games that had a lot of really heavy user base, they established and progressed out of the core game and added different other social aspects so that, of course, I mean, that's also a critical part, so that these people who are used to having the social connection while gaming stay even longer, yeah? So, I don't know, there's a striking example that you could hang out when it's Christmas or firing fireworks during Sylvester in a game, yeah? And that's what happened to games, but not in the virtual space. So, what the virtual space is really changing, that it gets even more immersive, and it's really, okay, you can see someone's hand literally touching your hand, and that's crazy. That's just something where a lot of magic can happen, yeah?
Agreed. It definitely will make everything more intensive. And I believe one big thing what it will achieve is it will make boring things not boring. Let's be honest, there are some topics, for example, in school or whatever you're trying to research, which could be boring. I'm going to take any example that comes to mind first. So you're learning about, let's say, dinosaurs, right? Okay, dinosaurs are not boring, but if you're reading about them on a page, a simple page with text and maybe a picture, a 2D picture, or even if you're looking at it on a web page or a software that is flat, let's say 2D on your screen, wouldn't it make the learning experience much, much more fun and effective if you could put on a set of comfortable, easy to use VR glasses or something along the likes, and you could actually see the dinosaur, you could see it moving, you could move around it, you could see doing things, and you could see your peers maybe or your teacher in there, you know, triggering things and stuff like that. So I think lots of things are going to be made more interesting and more effective, like in education, for example, through the metaverse.
I also have to jump in here because we also stumbled upon an article where it was about educational aspects of VR that you were talking right now. And there was written that there's 90% improvement to like normal methods, like reading something or seeing an image. And then also like doctors, when they use virtual reality educational aspects, there was an improvement of 230%. I guess then in comparison for reading a book or watching just content like videos. So being there and seeing it, turning around something and playing around with it is definitely a game changer also to learning something and educational aspects, yes.
Definitely. I actually saw that information as well, so that's definitely confirmed. I even read further along where it is actually being used right now in real-world cases, for example, but only a part of it. As I said, like the metaverse is a bunch of pieces that are working together. So, for example, BMW has a process where they are able to, with a certain hardware, overlay a virtual, for example, machine into their, a virtual engine into their cars. And so they do not have to, for example, make a real physical engine and try to fit it under the hood of the car, right? But they can actually overlay and mix the real world and the virtual world and see it very nicely, like you would see it in the real world, lowering down under the hood as an engine. And they are actually, if I'm not mistaken, saving 20% on their workload, so to speak, yearly on just that. So that's also huge things.
Yeah, definitely. It's just crazy. It's all about 3D, yeah? So you need 3D modules, you need a 3D space, so someone has to create all the assets. So there's a lot of effort into this. Of course, there are already some use cases for companies using this, but a new market. It's not just as designing something in Figma for an app. It's a totally new skill level that you need and people that you need that are really, really into 3D modeling and Unreal Engine and everything else, yes?
So we heard a lot about the metaverse, and I think we could switch the topic now to the importance of the UX for the metaverse.
I think that is a good idea, because otherwise we're just going to be talking about all the awesome things we saw in the metaverse and that we know about. So you could probably talk about it all day, but yes, I agree, we should probably focus on that. Well, Daniel is the expert in this regard, definitely. I could jump in possibly with my experience about the user experience as in regards to movement, input methods, locomotion, things like that. But I would definitely like to hear Daniel's input. I think is important for Kobe and for this podcast, primarily his input about design and things like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so much information about UX design and so many things and requirements that you have to think of. Basically, a lot of dimensions come in when you're finally in a virtual space and not anymore 2D on your phone. So it's basically, that's my takeaway, it's basically, especially at the beginning when it comes to creating all different application experiences, it's definitely about simplicity. Because having the opportunity or all the benefits of a virtual space is really something where someone could come into a frenzy mode of doing a lot of things at once. So, okay, I could place a menu here, I could place something there, and then I have the depth. Maybe if a user watches on this menu and then leans to the side, and then he can see this and that. So there is a lot of benefits and opportunities that you could use in the three-dimensional space, but you really have to be very careful. And I mean, on the one hand, it's about the applications or the experiences that you're getting in, but on the other hand, it's about the interaction throughout controls or how do you move. I mean, that's maybe something you, Igor, can jump in. But on the other hand, it's also about just simple navigation. And that's something where you have to differentiate between all these different aspects. And that's why it's so important for when you create new applications, when you let users in that know nothing about virtual or anything else, having their Oculus or whatever the headwear on for the first time, it's super important for them that they see patterns and navigational structures, information architectures that they are kind of used to, so that we don't just explore and experiment with new patterns, especially at the beginning, so that really that it's really getting a mass market and also for casual users that they know, okay, this is something that I know, this is a menu structure, I know what's behind that. But still, of course, you can play around a bit, putting the virtual reality magic on top of this, but that's really something you really have to be aware of. And that's why it's also very important to really test a lot by your own. How does it feel? How is it affecting people? Is it different when people are jumping in your virtual experiences, when they are just sitting or when they're walking around or standing around? So there's so many different aspects on this. And you could talk days about this, to be honest. But maybe, Igor, you can jump in with some input or experience from your perspective regarding the controls or the movement parts.
Sure. So I completely agree that it's better to start simple as possible, as intuitive as possible. Like that story with the first iPhone, where they could have not have had the home button, but they decided to have it because they needed a nice reset for people that got lost in the menu so they can get back home, you know? And then later on, they removed it. It takes a while for people to get used to things, but I have good news regarding that, at least in my experience. So since I've been touring the headset, and even before I had the Oculus, while I had like the Lenovo mixed reality headset, or even the cardboard headset, I've brought it to people. And I must say that I was very happy to see that people were extremely more quick to pick up how it works than they were, for example, a 3D game, but on a 2D screen, right? So usually when I gave people to try something with a mouse and a keyboard or a gamepad, and they're in a 3D space on a laptop or on a screen of whatever kind, usually it is very hard for them to navigate. They bump into a wall and they just go along the wall, and it's funny, but you know, they get used to it after a long time. But here, it was kind of intuitive. And I think that's like a big advantage of this space, that you can make it intuitive. And so I can just quickly then go into how people are moving or how people are touching things in the virtual world. So this might sadly be a little bit longer. So if you're interested about this specific topic, just stop me and we can talk. Starting with, for example, 3DOF or 6DOF. That might not tell everyone exactly what does it mean, but we've progressed from a point where you put your headset on and you can only move your head around. So imagine that was the first version of VR. Or of the metaverse, the start of the metaverse, you put on your headset and you can just move your head left, right, up, down. So you can't move your body, you don't see your hands. So all you can do, you can see your head. And usually people then just made experiences around that. So they either automatically moved you on a roller coaster and things like that. So that was awesome for that time. But then we progressed into 6DOF, 6 degrees of freedom, where you could actually move around. So if I, for example, was running from an alien, I was able to move to the desk and hide under the desk until the alien goes away. So that was super fun. That gives you something called, people in this industry call it presence. That's what you're trying to achieve. You're trying to forget that you're actually in this world, in this case. And at the moment, as we said, it's a lot of games. So that's what we're drawing our experiences from. It's not always necessarily the goal to detach you from the real world and forget about the real world. But if you want to have a bit of fun, for example, in games, then that's the goal, presence. And then now at the moment, the most common movement types are, so you're placed into this virtual space and you have one of two things. You either have something like game pads or something like controllers in each of your hand, and you can actually see it in the space, in the virtual space. It usually has buttons on it. It usually looks the same as it looks in real life, right? And so it feels the same under your fingers and everything. And you can either point literally towards where you want to go and it teleports you, or you can move the thumbstick and you actually move. That's kind of what most of the software at the moment is using. Then there's this other thing which is getting better and better, where you don't need controllers at all. You move your hand, and I wish I could show it to you now, like visually to the listeners. You move your hand in front of your head and you can actually see your hand. You can move your fingers. You can touch your hands together. That's really something nice, and it's getting better and better, and you can use gestures to do things in the virtual world. But even though that's the most common things, one of the things that was actually the most intuitive and fun thing for me, again, I'm drawing a parallel to what I said earlier in the video game Echo VR, which is what surprised me. The most comfortable feeling for me regarding movement and input methods was, I was in this game, it was in zero gravity, and I just used my hands to push or pull myself off of things because you're floating. And it was actually so intuitive. So you grab something and you use a natural hand motion. I was amazed how natural it was. You use a natural pulling motion or a natural pushing motion. I didn't even have to think about it. And it moves or floats you through the space. And of course, you have to account for the fact that maybe sometimes there's nothing to grab onto. Well, then they made a solution where you have little boosters in your wrist and you can just point. You can point like Superman. Basically, your pose is like Superman. You point your whole hand, your wrist forward. And since you're floating, you're looking like Superman. And then you're boosting towards where you want to boost. So it's a bit weird that my best experience was in something that's like zero gravity, because you would think that if you go to space, you would feel uncomfortable, but that's how it is. I think they have a great solution, which can't be applied to every type of experience in the virtual world, but it's definitely a good solution. I'm just looking forward to seeing other solutions, because there are, and it's going to be too much for me to talk about it now, but there's different hardware, whole body suits. There's like roller skates, so you can move around but actually be on the same space. There's like running tracks. There's just whatever you can imagine, possibly.
There's so much stuff you can have to interact. There's so much you can use. And there's, in the end, then so much complexity that comes with the whole virtual space. And that's why it's so important to do a proper onboarding. That's because that's something I really had bad experiences when trying out a lot of applications and demos and games and experiences, because it was always this kind of 30 seconds at the beginning where you just were somewhere and then you had to think about, okay, so you heard some voice, you were like, okay, is there something that I should also like watch at? Ah, here it is. I had to put my head to the left. The onboarding is so important, because you don't know where you are and you don't know what to do. And then you have these crazy controllers and then you have some interactions with you and you don't know what's happening. And that's definitely something super important and not talking about any UX details, but just in general, onboarding.
Do you think this overwhelming feeling is too much for the older generation? Is it just a thing for the younger generation?
I recently saw a video where they put, I don't know which hardware it was, where they put a virtual reality headset on top of a 95-year-old. She had this amazing moment that everyone has putting it on for the first time. She was like, wow, why? Oh, is this even possible? What? Okay, that's crazy. And so I think if you put it on, and if it's super easy for them to kind of interact, and even if they don't interact, even if they just are somewhere in a space, in a virtual reality, even if they're just doing Google Earth navigation, it's super fun and super, it's just a crazy immersive experience to have a different view on different things than just browsing through 2D sites, yeah? And that's just something that amazes everyone.
Agreed. I think the goal is going to be, it's supposed to be fun. And I think what will draw people to the metaverse in the future mostly will be fun. So they want to have fun in a new way. And it's definitely possible here. And most people don't even know it's possible here. So it's not the only thing that's going to be useful, but it will. And connecting to the onboarding topic that you mentioned, I actually was amazed by how it triggered my emotions. And I'm always like a proponent of talking about emotional things and new experiences, because I think that's how you get people hyped about something. On the Oculus Quest, I believe it's actually a software from Meta. It's called First Steps. And then this is something like an onboarding, which has things in it like you are in front of a table with lots of different toys and you're just being onboarded by having fun. But what stood out the most to me, and what I still remember, was I was teleported into this place where in front of me there was a little robot. He wasn't particularly 100% human-like. He did have a face and a body and huge wavy arms, like thin, long, wavy arms. But what happened was he stretched out his arm and his palm, and I figured he wants me to give him my hand. And that was exactly what that robot wanted. And once I gave my hand to that robot, it started dancing. And it kind of drew me in. And so you had to dance with that robot together. And it was amazing how such a simple thing was so lifelike. I really felt presence, like I'm there. And it was so fun. And I was laughing. And I think making onboarding like that, making it fun, is going to be a challenge, a task. But I think that's definitely a great way to go about it.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like fun what you experienced. Maybe I should try it too someday. But we're almost finished. And is there something we missed?
We probably missed tons of things. And I think one of our main goals for this podcast was maybe to talk specifically about the metaverse. But you just can't talk just about the metaverse as in some finished thing. You have to talk about things around it. We might have talked about VR a lot exactly now and maybe about games a lot, but it's just the name of the game right now. So I'm not sure. What else would you wish to talk about? Maybe Daniel?
Yeah, I also thought about it. So I think it's good that we see it from general perspective now. And we also talked about, if you remember, Igor, we talked about that the metaverse is something very in years, maybe we have it as we wish it, but till then it's coming in waves. Yeah, so first of all, virtual reality has to be really mass market. I mean, even if Apple sells its virtual reality headset, it will still cost €2,000 to €3,000, which is still very much money for like just normal people. So I think it still takes time, also technology wise, hardware wise. But virtual reality, if, of course, the whole remote work setting is still just being there, virtual reality will progress. And I think a lot of experiences will definitely happen and will definitely improve the whole situation when it comes to remote working. There will be a lot of stuff popping up besides, of course, all the games. And I mean, there's a real use case when you think about work. Yeah, we talked about that, Igor. We are still sitting, mm-hmm. 6 to 8 hours in front of a screen at home. And we don't have this feeling of social connectedness to others. Yeah, we have it when we do Slack, when we use Slack or do video calls. But I mean, if we imagine putting on VR headsets and then somehow feeling the connectedness and all the other coworkers, maybe also clients. Yeah, I think that's also another game changer that could happen. I'm excited, to be honest, how it's turning out.
Agreed. And I think that is a great topic, of course, the work from home topic. As you pointed out, people might think that, oh, I do not wish to have a screen on my face for I don't know how long. But then again, if you're working from home, let's be honest, you're most of the time for hours and hours, you are sitting in front of a screen. There is some interesting data about this, but I would like to first say I'm not a doctor, so this is not medical advice. But there is some data saying that at the moment, it is actually easier, for example, on your eyes to use VR headset than it is to use a screen that's, let's say, half a meter in front of you. Why this is because of the way they're making those lenses, your eyes are actually not focusing on something that is 5 centimeters in front of your eyes. Your eyes are focusing on something that is 2 meters in front of your eyes, and they're aiming to make it even further away. So what that means is your eyes aren't as strained as you think they might be, because you're actually looking at something that's farther away than your usual laptop screen or even book and things like that. So your eye is more relaxed, and they're actually working on it that, like, the focal point is even further away, which will make it even better for your eyes, let's say, like that. But other than that, obviously there's other concerns like blue light making you having a hard time to relax or go to sleep and things like that, which also the screens at the moment have. But that was just something that I wanted to touch upon, that work from home might be a real thing in VR sooner than we think, because first of all, as I said, it's not that bad for your health. Second, you're sitting in front of a laptop screen anyway for hours and hours, so might as well sit in a more fun environment, you know, work in space, let's say, or whatever, on the moon. And third, let's hope those devices will actually be affordable. Because, for example, what Meta is working on right now is their angle is that it's affordable. It's $299, for example, if you're looking at the US market. And lots of companies might want to buy it for their employees because it is not that expensive, but opens up so many opportunities. Plus, it's great for team building, right? So some companies, I'm not saying let's exchange real life team buildings for that, but it might make more frequent team buildings for a one-time price of $299. You can have as many team buildings as you want, fun events. But yeah, as I said, we're not here to try to say what's good or bad. We're just here to open up some topics and give people things to think about.
Thank you for all this input. Do you have some books or links you would recommend if someone wants to learn more about this topic?
Well, from my side, I love visual learning, so I would just suggest people go to YouTube and start typing in things such as Oculus Quest 2, for example, and then they will see lots of different, just type in Metaverse. There is certain creators which are doing a great job at it, but nothing I would say just go and look at it one thing. I would just tell people start exploring it. You might find something you really find exciting.
But if you want to learn more about the Metaverse, not only from our recommendations, but in real life, then we have something very special for you this May. Daniel, what could that be?
We are contributing to the Munich Creative Business Week. We are hosting an event here regarding the Metaverse and UX design. There will be Igor, there will be me, and there will be a guest speaker that I know personally. He's working in a company which is really doing things in the Metaverse, so that's very good, because then we have the theoretical aspects, and but also the ones who really do things and not just talk. And yes, then we will have discussions about the whole topic, and everyone is invited who is excited to hear, see, following a discussion regarding the Metaverse.
Great. I'm looking forward to it. I will be there. Thank you too so much for your time and for this interesting and really, really cool episode. So thank you.
Thank you very much. As I said, for the opportunity to talk about it. And imagine, we didn't even talk about controversial topics such as NFTs and everything else connecting with it. So maybe there'll be further episodes, hopefully.
What is there more to say? But Igor, Daniel, thank you and goodbye.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Das war sie, die zweite internationale Folge der Creators of Beautiful Experiences. Ich hoffe, Sie hatten genauso viel Spaß dabei wie ich. Ich fand das Thema sehr interessant und ich freue mich darüber auch mehr zu hören. Vor allem am 19. Mai bei uns in München im Büro. Auch Sie können sich anmelden
In den Shownotes werde ich Ihnen die Anmeldung verlinken und vielleicht sehen wir den einen oder die andere Zuhörerin auch bei uns vor Ort in München. Bis zum nächsten Mal.